Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Weekly DevTour. I'm here with Daniel Rowe. You probably already heard of him in some way, but he does do some fancy things with Nuxt and stuff. Having that said, we're not talking about Nuxt. We are talking about web fonts where I have zero to not really a whole lot of clue about. So I'm very excited to talk to Daniel about fonts today. Hi, Daniel. How are you doing?
Hello. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. So I basically already teased it, but when I implement a website, I usually use Google Fonts or something like that to just get started with it and then don't bother about it. But based on recent talks that I've seen of yours, you seem to have like some opinions on fonts, in particular how they affect runtime performance of websites. So tell me more about that.
So, I mean, I totally get what you're saying. For a start, web fonts are amazing because it used to be that it was not so simple. You probably do not remember the days before native browser web fonts.
I do.
No, you remember the days before. You did like Qfon, like the Flash implementation of web fonts.
No, I don't.
Exactly. But yeah, it's amazing that things like Google Fonts exist, and you can just drop a link in your head, and you are good to go. But there are problems with that, and there used not to be so many problems, but there are so many problems. So it used to be, for example, that you could cache resources like web fonts across sites. So Google Fonts could say, "Hey, here's a link. This is the link for, you know, Papyrus or whatever," and then every website that was using that font, you know, the CSS would be the same, the fonts could be cached. That's of course no longer true because there's no cross origin caching, which makes sense. Those people to try and track us through cache timing, you know, they're the reason we can't have nice things, and so we can't. But when you put that link in, it obviously is going to immediately add the overhead of connecting to another origin, hitting a DNS server for it. And that doesn't even get into the issues that are caused simply by having a web font of any kind in your project.
But, I mean, that could be solved if you bundle the font with your project. Then it's not, at least not a cross-origin request anymore.
Yes, you can do that. Exactly.
The way you're talking about it, that sounds like another but, though.
It's a very good thing to do.
Okay.
But the problem is often syncing. So with a lot of optimization, and it's a bigger picture question. When do you optimize? And how do you just manually optimize, or do you put a procedure in place that means you don't have to re-optimize when things change?
Let's maybe start on the fact, what would you optimize? Because I'm usually just dropping the font that I want in my project and be like, I'm good to go, or use Google Fonts. So,
well, Google Fonts does actually apply loads of optimizations for you.
Easy, I knew that.
But, you know, it's not a bad choice. I do think there are better options.
Okay.
On top of Google Fonts. But the kinds of things you want to optimize are, so of the format.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have bigger file formats and smaller ones. Different browsers support different formats. But these days, almost every browser supports WAF 2, which is great. It used to be that things were very complicated.
I do remember that.
And then once you have the file, the font file, you have different font faces, bold, italic. You also have different character sets. So you might have your sort of Western European certain accents involved, but there are lots more characters. So how full are you going to get with your font? And if you are using a font for some fancy custom headline or your sort of brand font, you're not rendering pages of text. You probably need very few characters, actually maybe even fewer than a normal one. And so there's actually a technique to address that called font subsetting, where you basically create a custom build of the font.
Interesting.
With just the characters you need.
So you mentioned font subsetting.
Yeah.
How does this work? Do you say like, oh, here are those 20 characters that I use, please build a font with that, or?
Exactly. Now, you mentioned Google Fonts. Google Fonts actually does this. You can pass the character set in the query string to Google Fonts, and it will generate on the fly a font with just those characters in it.
That's pretty cool. I didn't know that.
But even if you don't do that, it's possible to use something called, where you can pass Unicode range. And basically, in a font-based declaration in CSS, you say, hey, here's the file for format WAF2. Here's the file for format WAF. Just WAF, here's the TTF. Mm-hmm. This is going to be for the bold. This is going to be for... but then you can say, and it's going to be for these characters, correct, Unicode characters. So already, Google Fonts will generate a CSS file, uh-huh, which has lots of different font files for different Unicode ranges. And when the browser encounters something, a declaration like that, any font-based declaration, it's information that it then uses to decide when to fetch font. It doesn't do anything with it straight away.
Okay.
So what it will do is when it encounters a character in that Unicode range that has that font applied to it, then it will dynamically, then it will request that font file.
Oh, okay.
So, to answer your question, yes, if you're subsetting a font, you basically just, you run a command on the font and it strips out all of the characters that aren't in it. It's not always legal. So different fonts have different licenses. And I think we sort of have a feeling like fonts are free, right?
They're just, a little bit.
They're out there, unless you've paid for it, or unless but you know, there are a lot of different licenses. You can have a license to use it in print media, but not online. You have a license to use it online, but you might not have a license to subset a font. So you have to be very, very careful if this is in a commercial way in using the site. You know, you don't want to do anything that might put you afoul of that.
How do you tackle like this licensing topic? Like, I think Google Fonts does share the license of the font where you can look and read through it. But like in other circumstances, like if you're not using Google Fonts, how do you approach making sure that the license is viable for what you're doing with it?
It's difficult. It depends who you are, what kind of project you are as well. So, a lot of people are using these in their private websites. A lot of platforms have a license, a single license that you can read that spells out some key conditions for the server. So, Google Fonts, Bunny is another one, FontShare, FontSource. There are a lot of CDNs like that. Adobe has a very, very restrictive license. So do read that if you're ever using it. But yes, you want to check. And I mean, reading legal documents is hard, no matter what it's about, whether it's about fonts or something else. But the key thing is you don't want to get it wrong.
Yes. I do remember that, right, that you do have a legal background, though. So, this is not coming out of nowhere now, right?
I studied law.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
But you also did, in between, you did some consulting, right? So did you ever run into, or also now in your role as an UX team lead, do you ever run into performance-related issues that are introduced by fonts in a way?
Absolutely. So there are lots of potential pitfalls. Mm-hmm. And some are actually caused by trying to make things more performant.
Interesting. Yeah, I can totally see that already.
So the first obvious one, which you already talked about, is a font which is too big.
Yeah.
And that is, or maybe you, or maybe even more than that, overuse of web fonts. Because always consider, can you get away with system fonts? Because they are some really nice defaults cross-platform. But then when you do use web fonts, you can just pick something that is too big. So that is something you'll just have to look at and see whether it's worth it. But people also do things like preload web fonts. Cool. And when they preload the font, it basically bypasses the browser's normal mechanism of deciding when to load it, because the browser normally, which for good reasons, because the browser normally loads a web font quite late in the cycle. So you have the HTML, uh-huh, you have the CSS. Now, without the CSS, you don't know whether to load a web font, but you also don't know whether to load the web font until you have the HTML, and in particular, until you know whether the selector in the CSS applies to the node in the element in the DOM. And so it's at that point that you start loading. But this actually can be quite late on in the process. And wouldn't it be nice if there's not so much of a gap between loading with a fallback font
and then web font coming in.
Right.
So people sometimes think, rightly, let's get the browser going sooner.
Yes.
And so they'll add a preload link, but this is where it goes wrong. People preload not just the so imagine that this is your page. You might not use every font face. You might not use every weight. So you might have no italics, just bold on this page because it's a heading. But you've preloaded more. Or you might think, you might preload the wrong file, the font format.
Yeah.
So you might preload the WAF, but the browser is not going to pick it. It's going to pick the WAF too. So you might have this scenario, and I have seen it, where you look at the network tab and there's lots of network activity and the fonts are totally unused.
Yeah.
I think it would be interesting if the browser printed the same warning. I don't think the browser does print this warning. I should know that.
I've not.
I'm pretty sure
I've done that and not seen a warning.
Because the browser will tell you, the DevTools will say, hey, this site preloaded this JavaScript and it wasn't used, right? But I don't think it does it for web fonts.
The thing that I'm though wondering now, if you don't preload it, can you not run into layout shifts to some extent? I mean, not like in the dramatic way of like you're having like an entire section that you're loading, but like the size of the font will be different if you're like using like a system font. Or you're starting with a system font and then you're switching like to whatever you have.
Oh, yes. I mean, that's my least favorite like negative feeling about
it. Yeah.
So, I mean, obviously a slow website is terrible if you're trying to click around and it's not responding. But the other thing is when you're loading a site and then it changes.
It would be like a little jitter if the font is just like slightly different.
Yeah. But I mean, it can be more because if you go it can suddenly add another line.
It's true.
And that can be a lot bigger, even though it might just be a little width difference. And there are solutions for that. So the, some very, very, very cool stuff. So it's possible to take the metrics of a font. So if you imagine a font file is, I don't know, it's got hundreds of different characters in it. It's got lots of data.
Mm-hmm.
But if you take a look at all of those, you can extract some common metrics. So how high above the line does the top character go? How low does the lowest one go? Because different fonts are and how wide is it on average? You can't, this isn't a perfect metric, but you can take an average of a character set. So you can say of, say, the Roman alphabet, what's the average width?
Yeah.
And so you can come up with some metrics and use those to characterize the font. And you can characterize them with just those four numbers. And that's enough to say, now let's, we can actually morph your system font to be the same shape.
Interesting.
So it's not going to be exact. It's not going to look the same. You know, if it's Times New Roman and you're using Poppins, it's never going to look the same. But we can make it take up the same amount of space on the page, and as width-wise, on average, take up the same amount of space.
Gotcha.
Which means that you'll still have a flash, but it shouldn't move the layout quite so
much. Interesting. How? It sounds like very tedious manual approach to like figure that out.
Well,
one answer is probably going to be if we have a Nux module for that, but.
So we do. Thank you. We have a Nux module for that called Nux Fonts, but that Nux module is actually built on. So it's a bit of a story.
I have time.
Saga. How much time do you have? So originally, I built a small library called Fontaine, which is a unplugin. So it runs in any. Actually, I originally built it as a Nux module, but then I immediately saw this is silly to be doing this because it could be used by anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it specific to Nux? So I pulled it out and made it. It was originally like Nux font metric. So I pulled out and made something called Fontaine. And it basically, and by the way, this is not my idea, the metrics. I some very smart people at Google came up with this and I've sort of absorbed it and implemented it. So I don't want you to think more highly of than you are. But basically, what it does is it looks in the CSS for the font family you're using. And then it adds some metrics.
Yeah.
So it says, okay, so if you're using, I don't know, Nonito. So, and why not? That's legitimate. You should feel no guilt.
Okay.
And so you're using that font. And so we're going to add another font face declaration next to it. So you have the Nonito font face, and then you have like Nonito fallback. And it will have, instead of the source being a web font, it will have a source being your local font. And it will have some font metrics that we can apply to it. So we can basically, we have things like ascent override, descent override, and size adjust. New CSS properties that aren't supported by every browser, but this can be a progressive enhancement because it doesn't harm anything.
No.
If you're using an older browser, it just benefits a browser that does support it. And so we can generate that font face. And then when you're rendering the component, the component, clearly, but when we're rendering that node in the DOM, that selector, we can say the font family is going to be first our web font, comma, our fallback, and then our whatever else. And so the browser says, okay, right, we need this font. But while we're getting it, we're going to render it in the fallback font.
Yeah.
And so the browser then falls onto the value of metrics we've provided, shapes the system font to be the right shape. And then when the web font is downloaded, the browser then swaps across. Now you can control that totally with another CSS property where you basically say, font display, when do we display the font? If it takes too long, we maybe skip displaying the web font. You can block rendering text until the web font downloads, but mostly people just do swap. So you just, when it downloads, you change it across. And that means that there's not a huge jerk when that happens.
I do have a question about this because I'm well aware that I'm not the most well-versed in CSS universe. But how do you learn those things? Is it like a fonts.google.com where they list all those things here, like the 20 best resources about fonts? Or how do you get that knowledge? Because I'm doing web development now for more than 10 years. And other than like, well, let's go to Google Fonts and take them from there. I didn't bother much more about that. So how and where do you get that knowledge?
Well, it's very much not mine. I mean, I just...
Well, you still have that knowledge now. So somewhere there must be a universal resource like Wikipedia or something where they tell you, here's everything you need to know about fonts.
So this wasn't what I did, but there are some great resources out there at the moment. So Stoyan of Web Performance Almanac has some great font font performance resources. Articles, information, definitely check it out.
Cool.
And I think it's really helpful.
Okay.
I spent a lot of time with trial and error, basically, when I was building these things, not probably knowing where to look and trying a lot of things that didn't work. And also I had some very clever ideas that were totally... were not clever ideas. But I thought they were very clever at the time. I thought, this will solve it all, you know, and it didn't work.
So it sounds a little bit like spike-driven development where you're like looking at the network output or something, or you either were like bothered by the bundle size or by layout shifts and were like, okay, fonts are the issues, how I'm going to tackle that, where I'm more just oblivious to that. And we're like, that's fine.
And definitely friction-driven development is a very real thing for me because when you, I feel this all the time with Nuxt, for example, you know, I go for a long time building, fixing feature, whatever, And then I'm like, okay, right, I'm going to build that side project. And so I'm going to add this feature to my website. And then you notice something like, I can't believe that's what's happening. This is terrible. And, you know, I do the final polish.
Yeah.
I'm sure we all do, right? The site is done. Now let's get the metrics. And you put it in and you're like, I can't believe, why am I not getting 100? I should get 100, right? I mean, we all deserve hundreds on our site. You know, but this is before, you know, anyone from marketing is adding any scripts into it. It should be 100. There's no reason for a website not to be
That's true.
All green. And so if it isn't, it means either the framework needs a bug fixed or I need to fix my own site. And yes, web fonts are a thing that can be made better.
In my very extensive research that I did before coming to this interview, I came across a concept called variable fonts that are gaining traction to more support, like less about like performance, but more of a way to like provide rich typography and like be more variable in the way you use it. What can you tell me about that? Other than that it's a very fancy name.
They do that. Well, so variable fonts they're definitely not a solution for performance.
Yeah.
Unless you're using lots of weights of the same font.
Yeah.
So because a variable font will almost certainly be bigger than any given weight of that font, but it will probably be smaller than, say, two different weights of the same font or three, like depending on it. But the thing about variable fonts, which you know, is that they support more than just the normal axis that we think about. We think of two axes. We think of sort of italicity. You know,
like
how slanted is the thing? And we think about weight, how sort of chunky is the letter. But variable fonts support lots of different things. They can support formality, informality. So you can have a font which gets more like handwriting and more like print.
Interesting.
And you can have fonts that that sort of change in other ways as well. So any kind of axis that you can think of, you can implement in a variable font. Now, what does that realistically mean? You can animate it. Like from a CSS point of view, you can animate some
of
these things.
That's
fun, isn't it?
I mean,
probably not something for the body text on your website. But
if you have a title or something, doing the calligraphy style for a...
Yeah.
Yeah. I can totally see that.
And it means, it adds literally additional dimensions to your ability to portray whatever you're trying to communicate in your font.
It sounds like a very landing page marketing-y thing, though, not I'm working on a stock ticker or something.
I think when you give people a lot of choice, particularly with web fonts, you have to be very careful because there are only so many fonts, combinations that work, I think, for us. And it's very easy, I know I've done this myself, to sort of end up with I've got five different font weights of the same font just because I like the font. And, why don't we do this? And then it can create an almost subconscious feeling of busyness or clutter on the website. And that's not even mentioned. That's even if it's just one font face.
So one thing I'm very passionate about is accessibility. And I know for a fact that fonts can be more accessible than others just from the way it's written. It's easier to read and easier on the eye. But is there anything else that people need to consider to be and I'm not even talking about compliant with specs or something, just making sure that the website is generally accessible by supporting fonts in a specific way or something?
Well, one thing that's worth being aware of is that fonts can be different sizes at the same font size. So oftentimes, accessibility audits will highlight things that are related to the font size in pixels.
Yeah.
But actually, that doesn't necessarily mean that the font is readable.
Yeah.
And this is obviously exacerbated by the fact of, is the font itself, is it, a cursive fantasy style font, or is it a chunky sans serif font?
Oh.
There'll be a lot. And so that's not something that can really be automated, unfortunately. But there's definitely a question to be asked. So is my site readable? Thankfully, web fonts do significantly improve accessibility compared to some of the previous technologies that existed. Even rendering images, for example, which would obviously be a terrible, terrible thing for accessibility. But I would be thinking about the question of readability. But just also bearing in mind that users who use your website may have their own preferences for their fonts that they read your website in.
And is there a way to override that?
That is the design of cascading style sheets.
That makes
sense. The idea that you would have browser vendors' preferences, website makers' preferences, users' preferences, and the user preferences trump the others. And so, and that is something that we can often feel a bit annoyed about. Is that we feel like as developers we are in charge, yeah. but we're actually not in charge of how our websites render. We have a lot of control, but at the end of the day, there are things users can do, and changing fonts is one of the probably the things we should most expect that they will do, because a user might say, "I want to view this website in." You know, Atkinson hyperlegible.
Exactly. Because,
and that's what I want. And so if we create websites that are 100% to the pixel, they won't work if we're using a different font. Uh-huh. That's a question. I would, when you're testing your website with fonts, so one, test if it work, what it's like if the font is blocked. Mm-hmm. So it can't be downloaded or there's some issue with it for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. Also, delete all copies of their web font from your own system. Because sometimes people are building a website, they have the font installed, it all displays perfectly, they deploy it, and they find that they never included some font weight. They include one font weight, but not the other. It looked fine in their system, but it doesn't.
Absolutely never happened to me.
But also, and try it with a different font, yeah. because that is something users will 100% do. And different font sizes also. A font size is another very, very basic accessibility thing that people will set. We all know the experience of zooming into a web page, but there are other ways of setting font sizes too. So those are good to be aware of.
Never thought about that. So thank you very much for that. So we briefly touched on this, but there's to some extent a shift, or there used to be a shift from system fonts to custom fonts. And now due to performance and like bundle size issues, there's somewhat also a shift to back to system fonts. So you have like this kind of a gap of like creativity versus performance. Like how, other than like your fancy Nuxt trick, if you don't have Nuxt or Fontaine, where would you stand on that spectrum?
Well, asterisk, I want to say something about that. But, I think custom web fonts are great.
Yeah.
I mean, don't pick them just because you have to, but I don't think people do pick web fonts just because they have to.
Right.
I think it's a way of expressing individuality and feel, and that's a really good reason.
Yeah.
But obviously, you can rein yourself in and make good choices when you're doing that. But about Fontaine, like it works in Next.js, it works in Astro, it works in DocuSaurus. It's an unplugin, which means that it supports almost any bundler. I mean, if you're not bundling your app at all,
okay.
There are also websites that will calculate the metrics for you as
okay.
well. So it is possible to do it manually. There is a Nuxt module that wraps everything up mm-hmm. in the Nuxt ecosystem. And the Nuxt module, gave me so much satisfaction to build because literally the only configuration a user has to do in order to use a custom web font is write font family, the name of the custom web font. They just write CSS.
Okay.
And Nuxt Fonts detects that. It queries it. I built another package called Unifont, which is a single unified interface to the different font CDNs, mm-hmm. like Google Fonts, Bunny, and so on. And so it has a way of saying, hey, give me Poppins. And Unifont checks the registry, says, okay, here's the data. Mm-hmm. Nuxt Fonts downloads the font to the project, so it's first party, not mm-hmm. served from a third party.
Nice.
So no foul with German privacy laws, for example. So it's first party in the project, no DNS pre-connect issues. It injects the CSS into your CSS, so it's not a separate request. It hashes the fonts, mm-hmm. and it adds in the font size overrides to make sure that the fallback is the same size as the font you're using. It does all of that automatically, so the user never has to touch a thing. But, no.
Okay.
Go on, what are you...
I want to hook onto the CDN thing on that, yeah. but no, you first.
But this was so much fun. So I loved it. And it was so much fun to demo. And really, honestly, I felt so proud of it because it was, you know, my little baby out in the world and like bringing joy.
Mm-hmm.
But then a couple of other frameworks started to investigate. And the reason that underlying tools were separated out is so people could do this. So other frameworks said, hey, we'd like to do the same. I said, great, we've got the tools. Well, there is a amazing team from the Quick mm-hmm. team contacted me and said, hey, we'd like to do it too. Can we ask you some questions?
I've seen pictures on that. Okay.
Yep. And so, great, I said, and we had a chat. They went away and they basically took Nuxt fonts and they removed all the code that was related to Nuxt and said, actually, this works. Can we? So right now, I've been so slow on this, but I need to refactor it. But basically, Nuxt fonts is going to become agnostic, and it's going to work with any framework, any Vite based framework.
That's pretty cool. So it's going to be Vite font.
Well, it's going to be something.
That's pretty cool. On that, so if I imagine you have like, you said you support multiple CDNs.
Yeah.
There must be some kind of prioritization where you say, hey, try this one first because they're just better than the other ones, then go to the next one. I would at least assume that that's kind of like the behavior. Which one is the best? To put it very plain.
So the way it works is that it has this concept of font providers.
Mm-hmm.
And you can write your own as well.
Sounds very Java. It's so like a font provider.
Provider, exactly. Well, basically, it's just a file, and it has a sort of like setup function, which is when it gets the registry, and then it has another function which you can call it to say, "Hey, give me your whatever."
Mm-hmm.
So, when you configure this in your project in Nuxt fonts, there's also one, by the way, which just looks in your own public folder. So if you just copy a font in there, then Nuxt fonts will do whatever with that; it won't hit a CDN. You can granularly disable individual ones. You can provide your own prioritization. So there's no, it will do it in whatever order you want.
Mm-hmm.
By default, it...
I'm waiting for the but.
there's no but. By default, it hits Google fonts first.
Okay.
That's the first one in the list.
But you said at the beginning it's not the best.
Font CDN? Google fonts is great. But I just think there are better options than fetching at runtime from a CDN.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
So I think the better choice is to include it first party in your build as an asset. Because immediately what you have, the moment you have a third party, and I think so many people have probably struggled with this, they will use Google Fonts and then they will go to Google Lighthouse and say, show me my website. Google Lighthouse will be like, well, consider your cache headers. They could be longer. And then they'll say, look at this file from Google Fonts. And people are like, do you talk to each other? which is not like, there are legitimate reasons for this. And there's not actually a problem here. But it does feel a bit strange, doesn't it, when you get that warning. So there are problems that will be solved by including something as an immutable asset in your own deployment.
Actually, now that we talk about this particular, every time when I'm like troubleshooting issues related to font, I think it's really hard to deduct what font is applied right now, particularly if you have like fallback fonts and those kind of things, because it just says what font face is applied, where it's then saying like, well, it, by default, it loads Open Sans. If that's not there, then it tries Inter. If that's not there. So how do you tackle that? You seem smarter than I am. So...
I'm not sure. In DevTools, you should be able to see what font is applied to a selector. So it may be a different DevTools. So you might need to go to the font DevTools.
Okay. There are font DevTools.
There are font DevTools. So basically, if you're looking in your normal, like, what is it called? Layout or something like that. You'll see like your DOM nodes and you click on them and then you'll see like the CSS.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so that will say font family, whatever.
Exactly.
Right.
Not helpful.
But there is another font panel that will show you what font is being applied to the given selector and also which fonts are available on the page. And also, I should say, Firefox has great dev tools on fonts.
Okay.
So it's maybe worth also checking those. But there are some really helpful tools. And then if you do want to start debugging this, try granular network overrides, where you, if you go into your network panel and look at the fonts, you can block fonts one by one. So you can say, okay, let's see what happens if we don't have that font.
Yeah.
Okay, what is, because often if you want to say debug the loading state of the font, it's very difficult to do that because it's instant. And even if you slow your network down, you know, it's still going to time out. But if you actually block the requests to the font files, you can get, okay, this is authentically what the loading state is going to look like. And now I can then turn that off and see what the real. So that's a very useful tool as well.
Yeah, I didn't know that. So today I learned. I'm glad this was a great conversation. Okay.
It was worth it for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I always love talking to you, but this was very worth it for me. Because I always, as you said, like, looked at the CSS and I was like, yeah, this is useless. It's not doing anything for me. I know which font face or like font faces apply, but it's not doing anything. Glad, thank you. So I think we touched on this to some extent, but your recommendation would basically be at any given time, and that sounded like that's what you're doing with Nuxt, is use local fonts. So at compile time, you're basically, even if you're using a CDN, you're copying the asset and applying the CSS accordingly. So if you would have to, your strategy would always be basically local first in that sense.
Yes.
Okay.
I think your font should be an asset that is, it shouldn't be part of your build, probably, because it doesn't need to be changed.
Mm-hmm.
But you're probably not applying any transforms to the font.
I don't.
Unless you're subsetting it. But even that, so you probably don't want to be transforming it, but it still should be, yes, deployed with your site, ideally, I think, as part of your build asset. So onto whatever CDN you're using for your JavaScript. And
did you ever come to the scenario where you had, I cannot think about it, but usually you don't want to include assets as part of your build if you want to be very dynamic with them, where you want to like replace them and don't want to redeploy the entire site. This would be one scenario where a local CDN, for instance, could make sense. Is there anything that you have encountered, something like that, where someone is saying, I want to change my... I mean, like, Google does it to some extent, where they're like doing like the little widgets or something, and they change like on a regular basis. Have you ever come to the scenario where you were like, okay, we deploy our website once a month, but we change our font weekly based on the mood of the team?
So I, in my experience, fonts are very rarely changed.
Yeah, that's what I think.
And so they're one of the safest things to cache.
Yeah.
And the, I mean, you can, I would cache them as immutable artifacts and then change the name, and you can change the name with a hash of the contents if you expect the contents to change. That's something that obviously works best in a build step, where you're basically able, which Nuxt fonts, for example, does. But
shocked.
But also there, I mean, there would be lots of other ways of doing that. So I would say you're not looking for the same file name, you know, public sans.wav. You're going to want some kind of character, something in there that you can change when the contents change, and then just cache it as an immutable asset.
So one thing I'm also wondering, at this time we're in, it's not uncommon that you want to have like your site to be very multi-language or multilingual. So you might need also special characters, and then you also, depending on the countries you want to support, you have like right to left, text that goes from right to left, or even text that goes from top to bottom. But that, so I mean, that if you're sticking with the same font, then your character set is like massive.
Yeah.
How do you handle like the scenario of like, I'm Google and have my website running in 260 something countries, 190 countries, 190 something countries. 195? I think so.
I don't know how many countries Google...
I would assume all of them.
All of them, yes, exactly. Yeah, no, quite right. So I think Unicode ranges are our friend here, because you can... Now, it doesn't address the issue of testing it, making sure that your site does display properly,
yeah,
right? So, and, you know, it's possible to have different fonts for different character sets. You know, you could do that. But a lot of the fonts that people would want... There are fonts that are out there that are basically niche fonts that probably have a very limited set character ranges, but they are sort of very interesting characters. So people might use those for headings and things like that.
Yeah.
Probably not. They can get away with using it in the body for a particular language. The number of fonts, if you're saying, like, I want every language in the world to support this font,
yes,
there are many fewer of those. And yeah, so you're restricted in your choices based on the availability. But once you've picked a font that you feel does support all the characters you'll want to display, then it's the Unicode ranges which are your friend. So you're effectively splitting the font up, ideally, into lots of files.
Mm-hmm.
A user from India is going to get a different set of font files downloaded than a user from Spain, yeah, than a user from China. Yeah. And so that is, and that the browser just does that very effortlessly, so that you don't have to put a lot of, as long as they're split up and you provide the correct Unicode ranges, it's just done for you.
Okay, interesting. There's one topic in regards to fonts that kind of similarly trigger me like enums do in TypeScript, and that's ligatures.
Ah.
So, what's your opinion?
I love ligatures. I think they are wonderful, beautiful. They're works of art. They just make me happier.
That's I'm glad to hear that.
But, you know, I also, the font I use in my editor, I've had people tell me they hate it so much. But I think it's not surprising because fonts are very personal.
That's true.
And that what you like to see, and I've even been through a range of different fonts. At one time, I used JetBrains Mono.
Yeah, that's
everywhere.
A great one.
It's a beautiful font. I find the same to be true of music.
Yeah.
You listen to something everywhere and then you're suddenly tired of it and you use something else, you know. And then you come back to it and you say, oh, this is wonderful. Why did I ever tire of this? So it's very interesting, fonts and preference.
So not sure if you know that, but you basically are getting used to music. So if you listen to something, even if you're at the beginning, say you're absolutely hating it, like your ear eventually will get used to it. Do you think that's the same for fonts?
I do.
Because, ligatures still is not growing on me. I've had to look at them quite a lot.
But I feel it feels oppositional to me. It feels personal now. You're never going to be won over by a sweet looking ligature. You know, it's not, you're not going to think, goodness me, I love those three lines in front of each other.
Yeah, no, I absolutely don't. Well, Daniel, it was, as always, really nice to talk to you about those things. And I do want to use this time to thank you personally for everything you're doing in the Nuxt ecosystem, but also the broader impact that has on other communities like Fontaine and Unifont.
Yes. Thank you.
So I really appreciate your effort. And I think that's very impressive what you're doing not just for Nuxt, which is already impressive, but for the broader ecosystem. So thank you. And thank you for joining me for this cup of coffee.
Always, it's a pleasure.
Thank you so much. And thanks to you listening. See you next time.